Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
You're listening to our KBOO Fights Back campaign. Help KBOO reach our $75,000 goal by December 31st so we can bring you another great year of cutting-edge radio made by you, for you. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 to contribute today.
Pacifica Radio in San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, U.S.-funded subversion, violent anti-democratic behavior in Haiti. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is now moving to terminate temporary protected status, TPS, for Haitian nationals as of February 3rd. We'll feature an in-depth update on the worsening situation in Haiti. Also today, we'll present a powerful collage based on last week's Thanksgiving Day liberation ceremonies on Alcatraz. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein, and we start today's program on Haiti. This just coming out of the Congressional Black Caucus, having to do with the cancellation of a TPS for Haitian nationals. It says, time and again, the Trump administration has signaled out Haiti with harmful and unjust policies. After spreading misinformation and using dehumanizing racism rhetoric about Haitian communities, the administration is now moving to terminate temporary protective status, that's TPS, for Haitian nationals on February 3rd, 2026. This reckless and immoral decision threatens to uproot the lives and security of more than 330,000 Haitians who have lived and worked legally in the U.S. under TPS protections. Joining us to talk about this is our old friend Pierre Labossiere, Haiti Action Committee, longtime activist for the people of Haiti. And also joining us is Seth Donnelly of the Haiti Action Committee, both deeply engaged in fighting with and for the people of Haiti, despite the unbelievably cruel policies that have been coming for decades down from the United States government. Pierre, I don't even know where to start, but maybe the implications for the cancelization of TPS, and I think that signals that there are even more terrible things to come.
Yes, this is really devastating for the 300,000 plus Haitians who work here in the U.S. legally, who have been here and working legally in the U.S. The country pretty much has been devastated. First, when we look at the coup d'etat of 2004, and this is important that people keep that in mind, legally elected president being kidnapped by forces from the US, France and Canada, kidnapping the president, and that started this what we are seeing today. We have a saying in Creole, the day the leaf falls in the water, it doesn't work that same day. So it's a yes. process, and that's what we are facing. So many of those Haitians who were, many of my brothers and sisters who were forced to come to the U.S. because of the violence of the coup d'etat, the disruption that it caused, 10,000 people killed, untold disruption all over the country. Later on, we had the earthquake that added to that catastrophe. And after the earthquake of 2010, we had a series of terrible hurricanes that really piled on to the misery of our people. Another earthquake in 21 that ravaged the southern peninsula where I'm from. So we've had a series of these, and so people in Haiti rely on their relatives in the U.S. to help them financially. And people work, some people work two jobs and the money and send money home to keep their families afloat. And this is going to be devastating as it will increase the misery of the people on the ground, the hunger and everything else that is plaguing Haiti right now. So it's a terrible, terrible thing.
Listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, and we are talking about Haiti with Pierre Lebossier, and also the fact that once again you can Trump comes through, you can count on him to turn the screws and to take the most racist policy roads, and this is really bad news for the Haitian people. So Pierre, say a little bit about what's happening in Haiti. We're seeing a series of house burnings. The human rights situation there is beyond bad. Talk about it for us,
Precisely. So when you're saying to the people who have literally fled from a burning house, and now the fires are increasing in intensity, and you're forcing them back and disrupting the lives of the people, 300,000 plus, the impact on the families, that's on the families who live here in the U.S. now being forced out of the U.S. and the impact I mentioned earlier on the families who depend on them back home because of the many things that are afflicted. Now we are talking about a situation on the ground where you have death squads, organized death squads, and I would say armies of death squads that are ravaging Port-au-Prince, for example, is a city that's been pretty much destroyed. Many parts of Port-au-Prince are completely, it's as if a bomb went off, had gone off, several bombs. Because you look at neighborhoods in Port-au-Prince that have been emptied of the population, despite the fact that people were having all these difficult times, but still, people were very creative and ingenious, making a way out of no way, having their small businesses and what have you. But then you have a death squad that are being armed by a small ruling elite in Haiti, has been unleashing a campaign of terror beginning in 2018 against the population. And what I mean by that is literally this is what's happening: burning down homes, destroying, gang raping women, burning down schools, burning down hospitals. These are the things that they are doing, and chasing people out of their homes. And this is in many parts of Port-au-Prince. Over the weekend, for example, in one of Haiti's, in the Artibonite region, which is well known as the breadbasket of Haiti, this is very fertile agricultural lands, where people grow rice and various things. In Ponsonde, it's a huge market where people come from different parts of the country to buy goods that are produced locally and that are transformed by the people, agricultural commodities transformed by people. People come from all over to buy them, and then they get distributed in the marketing system inside Haiti. And so what has happened is Ponsonde was attacked over the weekend, and many people were killed. The number still has not been determined. And a number of houses in Liancourt, which is nearby, another... Liancourt is a city of about, maybe 30 to 40,000 people. Pretty much all the houses, almost all of them, have been consumed by fire, destroyed. Systematic burning, Dennis. I have a video that shows how people, how these guys were bragging, saying how they have torched in Ponsonde, for example, 100, and this guy said by himself, he has torched 150 homes. And we've heard figures of almost 500 homes being destroyed. People, there are reports of people killed inside their houses because they couldn't get out in time and the fires just burned them alive. An 11-year-old boy, it was reported, again, these are reports, that right in front of his parents was burned alive. These are atrocities that are being committed inside Haiti. And all of it is being done because they want to take the people's lands. They want the people to be empty, to leave, force them out of those communities. Because, again, I mentioned the Artibonite region is very fertile. It's reported that underground there are mineral deposits. And so the whole idea is to chase our people, our brothers and sisters, away from their land and to take it over. Today, by coincidence, is December 5th. That's when Christopher Columbus in 1492 landed in Haiti and started a genocidal war to get rid of the population, to steal their gold, their resources, put them in slavery. And that started the whole thing about the slave trade, the kidnapping of our foremothers and forefathers. And the Haitian Revolution was fought to put an end to this human trafficking, to this atrocious human trafficking. That's what our ancestors fought for. And they scored and they won major victories over the French who were involved in this human trafficking. And today we are seeing the return of this trafficking taking place in Haiti. This is no exaggeration. People are taken, kidnapped, and sold basically back to their families. The families impoverish themselves in order to come up with money to pay the kidnappers so they can release them. And sometimes they take the money and they don't release the people.
Well, speaking with Pierre Lebossier of Haiti Action, we're talking about the situation in Haiti. Also joining us is somebody who's been deeply engaged in fighting for the human rights of the Haitian people, Seth Donnelly of Haiti Action, and many, many actions in support, standing against this kind of violence. Seth, you want to talk a little bit about the implications for the Trump policy in the U.S. and also, I mean, there are some really dark forces, privatized government. You know, the United States government has always hated the liberation and the quest for liberation of the Haitian people. And we lived firsthand through Aristide. We watched how the United States government tried to devastate democracy. We're seeing the other side of that. So you want to talk about a little bit about both sides, the human rights and what we're up against?
Absolutely, and thanks as always, Dennis, for having us on and for covering what's happening on the ground in Haiti. Well, to deal with the first aspect, to kind of build on what Pierre was saying about how people are literally being forced back into a burning house, because that's what the coup and the occupation subsequent to the coup has turned Haiti into, is a burning house. Just so your listeners can take in some of the most recent aspects of that. So since the last time I was on your program, I think it wasn't that long ago, maybe a few months ago, the hunger crisis has dramatically increased. So today, according to the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification System that also has been classifying the famine in Gaza, today in Haiti there are now 5.7 million people in a very high level of food insecurity and hunger. And of those, 1.9 million are at this stage of facing acute high malnutrition and excess mortality rates. So those people are starving to death, right? This is not, of course, being covered by the U.S. mainstream media whatsoever, but this is just in and of itself the systematic starving out of the population is really driving what Haitians call a slow motion genocide, right? On top of that, now according to the International Organization for Migration, the number of displaced people has increased up to 1.4 million. So that just over the last year, that's a 36% increase. What's driving it? The death squad, the paramilitaries that Pierre was talking about. You know, these are referred to as gangs in the U.S. media, but really what's important, as we always drive home on whenever we have the chance to talk with you, is that these are really highly weaponized paramilitary death squads that are destroying neighborhoods, like Pierre was mentioning, burning down homes, carrying out systematic massacres in the most densely populated neighborhoods. And that's driving people, that's driving this crisis. So, and it's also a crisis.
Just interrupt for a moment and follow up. Mm-hmm. Who do they work for, these death squads? Who empowers them?
Well, they were empowered, and the key ones formed by the ruling PHTK party installed in 2011 when Hillary Clinton rerouted her trajectory. I think at the time she was off to Egypt, and she literally rerouted her trajectory to go into Haiti and help maneuver Michel Martelly into power, who was the head of the PHTK party. It's a fascist party in Haiti. And this party rules through this mechanism of these quote-unquote gangs. And so they were targeting neighborhoods that are bases of the grassroots movement, of the Lava Lost movement, such as Cité Soleil, La Feline, Bel Air. They've now proliferated all across the country, as Pierre was talking about. And they're also financed by members of the Haitian elite, you know, like within the oligarchy. So there's a clear financing of these, and then their weapons, of course, are coming overwhelmingly from the United States, shipped through Florida. So these are really made in the USA. The most famous leader of a federation of these gangs, which is the largest death squad in the country, is Jimmy Cherizier, a former police officer who had close ties with the PHTK regime. He's known on the streets as Barbecue, and has been linked to some of the worst abuses of all. So in other words, the first aspect of your question about the human rights situation, people are being forced back into these conditions. These 300,000 folks in the U.S. are being forced back literally into this slow-motion genocide. There's not a single elected official left in the entire country after the coup, after the occupation, under the occupation. So it's really horrific. Now, later, I don't want to talk too much at this point, but we can certainly, if you like, get into who's benefiting from this situation. There's clear beneficiaries.
Well, what I'd like to hear a little bit more about is what are some of the vital statistics like in terms of hunger and food, and what is going to happen? What are the implications for that? I mean, it sounds like the possibilities are bleak. Pierre?
Yes. What I've heard from folks on the ground, prices are just increasing. They are very high, beyond the reach of the average person. And so this has caused a lot of hunger, as Seth was mentioning, the deepening of the hunger crisis. And those death squads, what they do is they shut down various routes, various highways. And so people in the Artibonite who used to produce foods and crops are unable to bring those crops to Port-au-Prince. And if they manage to do so, they have to pay exorbitant fees to those death squads so they can cross, and they have to raise the prices when the goods get there. So that puts them out, those goods out of reach of the average person. And so what we have noticed with the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund and Haiti Action Committee, that we are getting more calls for support from people who before would not would support projects in Haiti, where folks would be on their own 2 feet and create things, would provide them some seed money to do things. But now people are just asking so that they can survive, so that their kids can eat. And this is something that I feel as I talk to the folks, I can see the difference, and it's increasing. So this is what's going on.
And just to tag on to that, Dennis, this hunger, starvation crisis is really the result of the U.S. neoliberal model, or what Haitians call literally call the death plan, that's been imposed on Haiti, right? So it's not just privatization and austerity that classic IMF impositions, but also going back to when under Clinton, the U.S. government pressured Haiti to eliminate any kind of tariffs protecting local domestic rice production. And at that point, heavily subsidized U.S. corporate rice flooded the market and pretty much wiped out Haiti's domestic rice production. Up to that point, Haiti was self-sufficient in rice as a key food staple. So by 2009, well into this domination of the Haitian market by U.S. rice, not surprisingly, U.S. rice prices then doubled. But at that point, it was too late to go back because the market had been taken over. And I remember being in Haiti in 2009, and there were food riots over, so that there's been a simmering issue for a long time of hunger and malnutrition. But now, as Pierre was saying, with the paramilitaries that have been unleashed by the U.S. coup, taking over and the country, cutting down transportation, it's driven prices up. I mean, I talked to folks in Haiti, and it is beyond reach. It's similar, I suppose, to what's happening in Gaza with the limited food that people can access. The pricing is so high that people in Haiti are starving.
Pierre, you want to jump in here, expand on?
Yeah, definitely. Despite all of that, Dennis, I have to let people know that our sisters and brothers in Haiti are fighting. They are not taking it. There is a number of communities that have formed their own self-defense groups to protect themselves against but they are outgunned because they don't have any guns. They have sticks, they have stones, they have bottles, they have all those things, machetes and knives. But we are talking about these folks who have machine guns, who are provided with those. And the guns are coming from the U.S., going through the ports. Most of the ports are controlled, are in the hands of the ruling elite in Haiti. And the ports that are government controlled are really dominated by members of the elite who have exclusive, pretty much dominance over those ports. And so they bring in the guns, and Haiti is awash with guns. Now, where are some of those people who are in those gangs are coming from? Many of them, as Seth mentioned, the leaders of them were actually policemen who were trained after the coup d'etat by the UN forces in Haiti. And so the people that they recruit are mostly, many of them are children on the streets who, after the coup, the schools were completely, pretty much education became what President Aristide was doing, providing education for the people. That was eliminated. And so you had a big increase in the number of street children, the number of people who are desperate. And so they are recruiting with a lot of money and what have you to fill those armies of death squads in Haiti. And this follows a plan, Dennis, and I'll be brief about it. There is a letter, and I keep mentioning that, a message that the Haitian, a member of the Haitian ruling elite, he didn't give his name, it's a he because the voice is the voice of a man, and he stated, he predicted, that was in December 2016, that was, he announced, actually, to be more precise about it, that this particular campaign was going to take place. And so it's very detailed, and that's what we are saying today. So this is a plan, a well-constructed plan being executed, and people in Haiti are pointing the fingers at those imperialist forces that have been in charge of Haiti, that have been occupying Haiti since the coup d'etat of 2004.
And of course, Pierre, we know that most of the people of Haiti are poor, but Haiti and the country is resource rich in a world that has a great deal of interest in what's under the ground and what's possible in Haiti and the region, right? So there's another battle going on there.
Precisely, because Haiti, a number of those places where those death squads are and what the media calls gangs, They control areas that have a lot of mineral wealth. For example, oil, natural gas, uranium, iridium, copper, gold, and a number of Haitians say that these are the guardians of those things for multinational interests that are that really see the those that have their eyes set on those mineral deposits and to take them. Their problem is that there are people on the land, and those people, our brothers and sisters, are not willing. The land that their ancestors fought for, died for, bled for, they are not going to let people take that land that easily. And so they need to have a campaign of terror to drive them off, to kill them. And as this man from the ruling elite had said in his message in Creole, announcing this campaign of terror against the population. I translated it in English, and so I have it available if people want to hear it or read it, actually.
And how do they read it? Where is it?
Actually, right now, I have it. It's not posted anywhere yet.
Okay.
You let us know, and we'll let you all know.
Did you want to jump in here, Seth?
Sure. I just wanted to give an example of what Pierre was talking about, which is, the function of the PHTK regime. Again, I can't emphasize enough, installed essentially by Hillary Clinton and under the Obama administration, and then maintained through Biden and through Trump, etc. But one of the companies that was moving in on the gold is a U.S.-based mining company. I think it might be the largest gold mining company in the world, Newmont. And the PHTK regime at the time was trying to move mining contracts outside of the constitutional process, which would require normally the parliament, I think, would have to approve of these contracts. And they were trying to move it outside that process. But at the time, it was just being explored, and the company was on the ground investigating, and there was local communities pushing back. I'm not sure where that stands today, but that's one, people, like you said, just people don't understand the level of resources that are there. Right. And then, another quick example is Andy Oppenheim, this member of the oligarchy who's very close to the Clintons and to the U.S. government, a sweatshop owner. The PHTK regime granted him 8,000 hectares of land for a stevia export for Coca-Cola as a sweetener. But in doing so, they displaced massive peasants.
Okay, I've got to jump in here because we're running out of time, but here's obviously we're going to continue next week. There's a lot, we're going to stay day to day with what's going on in Haiti because things are moving fast and there's a lot of suffering here that's being created by this emerging Trump policy. And so we're out of time now, but if people want more information to follow you, what you're up to, what the committee's up to, Haiti Action is up to?
Yes. HaitiSolidarity.net, HaitiSolidarity.net, and also HaitiEmergencyRelief.org. That's the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, HaitiEmergencyRelief.org, and Haiti Action Committee, HaitiSolidarity.net.
I thank both of you. Please come back. We're going to continue this dialogue next week because we care a lot about this issue and there's a lot at stake. Thanks to both of you again. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And I believe if all goes well, we're going to take a short break and we want to then play for you a beautiful collage of the celebration of On Thanksgiving on Alcatraz, the liberating of the continual liberation of the island of Alcatraz. KPFA in the heart of the matter. Stay tuned.
One,
and you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio, KPFA here in the Bay Area. And we thank Falco Molina, who was on the island for the liberation and made us this beautiful collage that we share with you now.
I like everybody in your own language, even if it's English, but your indigenous language, to join me to give thanks to the Creator, to Acheta. Everybody say thank you together. Chokwe Utesia. Thank you very much. You know, back in the day, we used to call this Unthanksgiving because we remember and we know the stories, the true history that comes from our relatives from the East Coast of this continent about how the very first Thanksgiving Day was declared by the governor of Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1637 to give thanks for the massacre of 700 Pequot men, women, and children by the settler militia. So we felt bad because we know what we were all taught in school about the pilgrims and the Indians all sitting down happy eating pumpkin pie and turkey. That's not what really happened. But then we realized we're indigenous peoples. We give thanks every day, every morning to our Father the Sun, every night to our grandmother, Mala Mecha, the moon, to the stars that we can still see that in our way are the spirits of our ancestors guiding us. So we call this Indigenous Peoples Thanksgiving. We give thanks for the courage and the persistence and the resistance of our elders, of our ancestors. We remember that this housed Indigenous resistors here from California and Hopi Indians resisting the boarding schools. And we give thanks for them, and we give thanks that we still have these ways and this knowledge. And especially on behalf of the International Indian Treaty Council, we give thanks to each and every one of you that is here. May this be a day of healing, of renewed commitment to the struggles that we're facing wherever we're fighting them. Be good to each other, be kind to each other, share good words, share a smile, share a hug, share a prayer. And we thank all those cultural presenters that are here to share their cultures, their dances, the drum, the song, to all the resistors, including those that stood up here. Chokwe Otesia, welcome on behalf of the International Indian Treaty Council.
At this time, we're going to ask for Greg Castro. Greg Castro, can you please come up? The Ramaytush Ohlone peoples.
Greetings. My name is Greg Castro. I'm Totros Lenin, Rumson and Ramaytush Ohlone, three lineages of indigenous California, and I'm the culture director for the Association of Ramaytush Ohlone, who are the caretakers of this land that includes Alcatraz. And we want to welcome you, and we're very honored to be here to welcome you, all these indigenous warriors that are here to celebrate our heritage, our past, and our future. I'm here with my Ohlone relative, Kenyon Sayers Roots. I'd like to start this off in a good way here to welcome people into Yalamu. Let's see if we can do something about this wind. Ara pa chitio Juan wasiahiem. 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 Oh, 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 oh. Hi, it's Bunny Gun. The Ramatush people were nearly devastated by colonization. But we haven't forgotten our sacred obligation and instructions to take care of this land and all the people on it. So in that spirit, we come here today to welcome you all and to hope that you take that same spirit upon yourselves to take care of this land and all the people on it, including all the people here gathered today in this celebration of being indigenous. Thank you so much. Hi, it's Bunny Khan.
Sasula Aya, thank you to Radley Davis. Can we find out if the statement is queued up for sound, please?
My name is Leonard Peltier. I'm a Chippewa and Cree from the Turtle Mountain Reservation. My father, that's where my father comes from. And my mother is from Spirit Lake. She's a Dakota. And so I'm part Dakota. And I just recently spent 49 in prison, and I'm now sitting at my home. And I want to say to all of you, I was planning on being there with you today, but those that control my movements and my privileges denied me a pass to go out there. And I don't know what the full reasons are yet, but we hope to find out. And of course, it'll be too late, but I just want you to know it's not our doings. But I want to say hello. I hope you have a good gathering today. I hope it's strong, and I hope a lot of people have come here. And I want to say hi to all of you that are here to attend this. And I will be saying some prayers with you, but unfortunately, it'll be over here in North Dakota, which I encourage all of those that are listening around the country to do the same. Let's make this, we can't be there, let's make it strong with prayer. Let's ask the spirits to guide everybody that's there and to give them a good gathering and make you all feel good. And I also want to say thank you to the runners who have been running for me for, 25 years now? I'm not sure. It's been a long time. I want to thank you for the efforts you put in every year. And I know it's not easy. I'm a runner, too, and it's not easy to get out there and put all those miles in. So I want to thank all of you, especially young people that come to join every year. it makes me feel very, very proud and my heart to know you care so much to do this for me. And I want you to know that if it was a hard struggle, I kept our issues alive from day one. I wrote statements from prison from day one, and I let people know that it wasn't about Leonard Peltier. It was about the native issues, crimes committed against us, and they continue to commit against us. And I still feel today that we're still in danger from what the politicians are saying. And we have to unite. We have to come together, like, because we're in great danger. So we have to come together like we've never come together before. And I know you young people will do it, too. I feel it in my heart. And I feel it that you will do such thing. And I'm glad to be here with my brother, Nick. He fought hard to get me out of prison. And I'm very grateful to him. And thank you, Nick. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. But, yeah. So we are willing to stand with you. We are willing to be your guides. Unfortunately for me, as you know, the restrictions are very, very strong against any kind of movement I have. But we're trying to get that taken care of. We'll do our. My lawyers are going to do the best, and my supporters. I know you're going to all continue to struggle for total freedom, my total freedom. But we got to remember, we also need to fight hard for our people for total freedom. That we don't have to be afraid of somebody trying to abolish our treaties and stuff like this. Because remember this, that we got to fight hard for them, as we did in the. And back in our days, in the 50s and 60s, when I was growing up, but our grandfathers before us, and grandmothers, you have to read that history and know that history, young people I'm talking to, and you have to see how hard they fought for us and how dedicated they were. And so a lot of them died for that now. And then you go back even further, and it was even happening back there. So it wasn't just the American Indian movement, the 60s and 70s times. This has been going on for centuries. And unfortunately, it looks like, apparently it looks like gains, and it made some real strong gains. Some of us are doing very, very good, and don't even look like reservations, concentration camps anymore. But it's not over, as I said. And we still have some that are native nations that are living in dire poverty. So we have to think about them, too. And so the struggle isn't over. And we need you to, your generation's coming up, and we need you to stand strong and come forward. Don't be afraid, you know, stand up for your people. You have to take the reins now from us. And that's you, Nick. You guys, the young guys, are going to have to step up. And Nick's already doing it, so I don't have to preach to him. And you guys, it's your turn, next generation. You know. Let me first say that, yes, I know that a lot of you, we call the AIM babies, have taken over and built enormous progress in our Native nations. And I'm very, very proud of you. I was shocked. I didn't know all this was happening, and some of this stuff was happening. And I see you listen to us, and you actually got some of these things going. And we got our own economies going, and we got our own education system going, and cultural groups are still getting stronger. And so I've been some powwows of 3,000 natives out there dancing, and wow, I couldn't believe it. You know, it was fantastic to me, and it's I feel so happy I made a sacrifice and encouraged myself to believe that it was not in vain, and I would do it again. I would stand up and fight for you again. And you know, the sad part about it, we see the world has not changed out there. We see what's happening in the Palestinian land. This is the same thing they did to us. Same damn thing, only different weapons. They got more powerful weapons today. But look what they're doing, killing women, children, babies, unborn babies. And every day, they're killing them, they're murdering them. And this is what they did to us. So we got to stand up for them. We got to stand up and scream, this is what you did to us. And we want you to stop that because it's both parties now. Got to remember, Biden started all that stuff. So it's both parties that are involved here. So we got to let them know, especially the Democrats, you continue to do this and not support this, it's going to be political suicide for you because people are moving away from it. Just like they told him, if you don't let Leonard go, it's going to be political suicide because we're going to break away from you. Well, it's the same thing here. We have to stop them killing those babies and people, them people over there. And we want them to know we're going to stand with them. We're going to stand up there and we're going to do everything, make our voices heard to stop that murdering of your people. Because I can't believe any God would sanction something like that. I can't believe that. So I don't know. They're claiming it. This is God's doing and the Christianity. And where does it say that? I don't think any of their Bibles or anything says stuff like that. But we want the Palestinian people to know we stand with you. We stand with you. We're going to stand with you until they stop killing you. You know, then we'll talk about rebuilding the country that you destroyed. You know, right now, stop the killing first. Okay, I just wanted to say another thing that about the importance of unity and stuff like this. My brother Nick here has fought hard, had demonstrations for trying to get me out of prison and stuff, but and they are now trying to put him in prison on false evidence and evidence that don't even exist. And he needs, and we need to get behind him to support him. So I wanted people to whoever listens to this to help us set up a support group behind him. We need the masses to get behind him. Let them know those times are over when they can falsely put us in prison. So I wanted to say a few words about that. All right. Thank you.
At this time, we're going to ask for the Palestinian Youth Movement. Palestinian Youth Movement and AROC representatives to come up and join us. And then we have All Nations up next. And so for PYM to come up, and we have some words of solidarity that they are coming to share with us this morning. And we are so grateful. Our sister Nadia joined us this morning. And Mohammed, thank you so much.
Sabah al-Khair, good morning, everybody. My name is Nadia. I organize with the Palestinian Youth Movement. And I was born here in occupied Ohlone territory. We are 781 days into the genocide of the Palestinian people. Y'all have heard of a ceasefire over the past 7 weeks. But just like many things, it's a lie. There is no ceasefire today in Gaza. Today, instead, we are seeing a surviving population that has lost almost a quarter, 25% dead and missing of our people in the Gaza Strip, who now are facing down the possibility and the threat of the American occupation of Gaza. Trump's plan to the United Nations is to take 53% of the Gaza Strip in order to create settlements, which are already illegal under international law. He wants to place Israeli settlers inside of the Gaza Strip and an area for screened Palestinians to live. If in exchange, they will get water, food, and shelter, and they must promise to never return to their homes. Shame!
Shame!
We speak here today as Palestinians in the Bay Area and all across Turtle Island, displaced from our homeland. And we do not know still the statistics, the impact, how many dead, how many missing. What has happened after four layers of civil society have been destroyed and we have witnessed this genocide? But we are also here to say there are 10,000 of our people currently living and every day surviving torture inside of Israeli jail system, including children. Shame!
Shame.
And we are speaking today before you, our siblings, our indigenous relatives, because we know that this is a moment that is going to get very hard for all of us. There are battles that we are facing now that we thought we had won, and they are being rehashed. And that is especially true here today on Alcatraz, commemorating the reoccupation, and also in the face of a retelling of things taking. There is the day after when they take somebody from their youth and make them a political prisoner like Leonard Peltier. There is a possibility for his freedom. He is free. When we look in the face of history, when there is a threat of what the government wants to do to this island, we look at the history of the reoccupation and the paradigm shift, the shift in consciousness that has happened due to the sacrifice of indigenous people everywhere. Do not, we are in a phase where we do not know what is next, but we know what we must do. Do not allow them to retell a narrative. Do not allow them to create a genocide and remake their face. Do not allow them to retell America as democracy. Do not allow them to retell Zionism as benevolence. No, we will not stand as survivors of genocide and settle for anything less than freedom. There have been many moments of trying. We know that this year we also lost Asada Shakur, who was an elder who gave her life. She died a free woman in Cuba rather than being locked in this prison system here as a prisoner of war. I met an older woman who interviewed her many years ago and asked her, "Aren't you afraid of what will happen?" She said, "I am less afraid of what will happen if we continue to struggle for our freedom. I am more concerned of what will happen when we don't." So remember, in these historic moments, that we stand here as survivors who have the responsibility to carry on that which our people could not, which they paid the ultimate price for. We only lose the possibility of self-determination when we stop fighting for it. I want to pass the mic to my brother Mohammed Sheikh from the Arab Resource and Organizing Center. And I want to thank you all for having us here, for the long, unbroken history of solidarity and internationalism between indigenous peoples all over the world struggling against settler colonization and eradication. We are stronger together. We will fight together. And they have not broken our spirit, and they still have not figured out how to do that. And for that reason, inshallah, we will be victorious. Oh.
Good morning. I've been coming to Sunrise Ceremony for just over the last 10 years, and every year I see more and more people wrapped in a kafia, and it's a beautiful thing to see. I'm deeply honored and humbled to be standing here today on behalf of AROC, the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, on behalf of the Palestinian community of Arab and Muslim people living here on the lands of the Ohlone peoples and beyond. First off, I want to share our endless congratulations to the freedom of Leonard Peltier earlier this year. May all our political prisoners be free. The depth of our connectedness and our solidarity with the indigenous people of this land and across Turtle Island cannot be understated. For over the last 2 years, our family, our relative, our loved ones back in Palestine, the indigenous people of that land, have experienced one of the most brutal genocides and ethnic cleansing campaigns of our modern history. Yet despite an estimated nearly 200,000 people that have been martyred, despite the starvation, the bombing of homes, the destruction of Gaza by the hands of the settler colonial Zionist forces, the Palestinian people remain more steadfast than ever today. If there's anything that we've learned, it's that the Palestinian people will not be moved. And this is where we're humbled and we take deep inspiration from the resilience of the indigenous people of this land and your centuries-long struggle against settler colonialism, ethnic cleansing, and genocide. Those who have everything to gain from our oppression and suffering will always try to eliminate us, but they will never succeed as long as we are united in our resistance. And our unity and resistance is needed more than ever today. We are facing a fascist regime that is seeking to make white supremacy, patriarchy, and the domination of working class people the permanent law of the land. Through the attacks on immigrants, on land, on natural resources, on the rights of workers, the bodily autonomy of women, and the attacks on our two-spirit siblings, they are attempting to crush our ability to survive, yet we are still here, you are still here, and we are fighting together fighting back as hard as ever today. We know that a different world is possible where all life is sacred, and we know that this world will only be ushered in through our collective struggle. It is on us to build that world through isolating Zionism and putting place an arms embargo on the apartheid state of Israel. It is through supporting the Oakland People's Arms Embargo Campaign led by AROC and the Palestinian Youth Movement. It is through land back and protecting our earth, through organizing to defend our immigrant communities, through standing with workers against their bosses and their exploitation, and through confronting the machinery of war, imperialism, and settler colonialism wherever it rears its ugly head. So, as today and every day, let us continue fighting for this world, from Palestine to South Africa and across the continent to Asia and South America and all the way around the earth, right back here to Turtle Island. Solidarity and struggle until all our liberation. Thank you.
We have this beautiful banner here. I don't know if anyone can help to hold it up, but we have a banner here that was created for our relatives, the anti-colonial solidarity banner. And so that our relatives drove it over all night so that these both would be here with us today. So thank you for that. And thank you to all of our relatives for being here. We also want to mention that although Leonard Peltier is on home confinement, we have a relative that's still incarcerated here within California, a California Indian man from the Big Sandy Rancheria. His name is Douglas Chief Stankiewicz. And our friend Gavrila is over here passing around petitions and passing around cards to free Chief. He was on death row in San Quentin for over 48 years, and he's now been transferred over to CMC, Justice for Pine Ridge, Reign of Terror Victims, and Anti-Colonial Solidarity from Turtle Island to Palestine.
My name is Miguel Gavilan Molina. I am from Free Speech Radio, KPFA, your radio community station. The Mexica dancers are getting ready. We find ourselves right now in a cruel and unforgiving United States of darkness with a fascist dictator, destroyer, and a dynamic force called the presidency, who's a verbal arsonist, fire hose liar, and has declared a cultural, spiritual war against the brown indigenous masses, causing escalation of violence to create chaos, fear, and confusion to make peaceful protesters and brown immigrant workers look like terrorists. Fear and anger are designed to take you out of your heart and cause confusion. But we're not doing that here today. Being spiritually in tune and street smart is a potent combination, and spiritual liberation of body, mind, and soul through art, keeping the dream of hope alive like an eternal inner flame. The power of art and meditation and prayer is something that we learned from Leonard Peltier. We, the indigenous of these lands, are the centerpiece and very fiber of democracy. Yet we are always seen as the other, the invader, the foreigner, the stranger, the alien, as someone who doesn't belong here. But guess what? We are the Aboriginal peoples of these lands. And when I look at the morning star rising the sun. I know exactly who we are. We are children of the sun, people of the corn and the salt of the earth. Our unity as tribes and nations is a fear that they have, because our unity is our power. The symbol of the Mexica of freedom is a monarch butterfly who sees no borders, for no wall is tall enough to stop its majestic flight, nor humans fleeing hunger and violence, for our roots run deeper than any border. Our spirits soar with the four winds, and our love rises higher and higher. Our mere existence is resistance.